our 15-minute speaker, and tonight our 15-minute speaker is Nikki.
Hi, I'm Nikki, I'm an alcoholic. I am shakingly nervous right now. My sobriety date is July 27th, 2009. I have a home group, it's this one, and I have an amazing sponsor, and I'm available to sponsor others. Quickly, I was born in Danbury, Connecticut. When I was about 5 years old, we moved to St. Pete area, and there I was put into a new school, and I still remember this, you know, like it was yesterday. I was freaking out because I had never been to a new school before, and it wasn't anybody else's first day, and I was pissed off about that, and you know, I got to be the only one that was uncomfortable for that day, and I threw the biggest temper tantrum of my entire life. And I held my hands on the clutches of the doors, and I was screaming, and I didn't want to be there, and I was just making the biggest scene in front of all these little five-year-olds that must have thought I was on some sort of a drug. My mom was so upset, you know, about how upset that I was, that she waited in the principal's office for, like, 2 hours because of that scene. And, you know, that is just the start of putting my mother through hell. I continue to do that, you know, today. I still do it. You know, because I'm not perfect, and I don't do this thing perfectly, but, you know, I do make a better attempt today now that I'm sober. Skipping to, you know, high school, I was convinced that I was terminally unique. There was no one like me, and I was pretty satisfied about that. I got told all the time how unique I was, and I definitely prided myself on it, and I hear that a lot in other people's stories, that they felt different, and you know, that they never felt a part of. And I hated it. I complained about it, but at the same time, I prided myself on it, and I wanted to be different, and I didn't want to be like you. But I would tell everybody that I wanted to be like you. In the back of my mind, I really did just want to fit in, and there were many opportunities. On the outside, it looked like I fit in. I was a cheerleader. I did competition cheerleading for about 4 years, and I always had a boyfriend, you know, big codependency issues, and you know, I did well in school, in high school. I made pretty good grades, and I still never fit in with you guys, and I didn't want to. I thought y'all were snobby bitches, and anybody like me was just not worth hanging out with. That was my my opinion. And when I was, I think 15 or 16, my you know, the one broke up with me, and you know, he had cheated on me, and I wouldn't let him break up with me, so he cheated on me. And, you know, I learned that in my fourth step, that I had a part in him cheating on me. I was like, how do I have a part in him cheating on me? You know, he cheated on me. Why do I have a part in that? And the fact is that I didn't let him break up with me because I was, you know, psychopathically codependent. And the result of that was I acknowledged, I guess, that I was crazy. And I got Baker acted for the first time at 16. And I didn't get Baker acted right away. I went to jail the first time. And, you know, they asked me some suicide questions when I was in there for the 13 hours that I sat on that bench. And I answered them honestly. I thought everybody thought about suicide. I thought everybody had attempts at suicide. And you know, I didn't think that it was a big deal to say yes to those questions, that yes, I've thought about suicide, and yes, that I've attempted suicide. And they let me go. My parents came and picked me up unwillingly. I wouldn't want to pick me up either. I broke my mother's thumb that night before I went to jail because she wouldn't give me my keys to go see the boyfriend that cheated on me. And I was very angry. I was very, very angry. And mind you, I had never picked up a drink or a drug at this point. And I get back home. My parents come get me from that center. And within 3 hours, the cops are called again. And I'm freaking out because I want to go see my boyfriend that cheated on me. And, you know, is just, you know, at this point, it's just like, what's wrong with this girl? You know, I don't want to be with you, and you're calling me from the hospital in the ER telling me you love me and I cheated on you. And I was just, you know, I was insane. I was so codependent. I was nothing without him. He was my higher power. And you know, I learned a lot from that. You know, you can't make somebody your world, because when they're gone, you don't have anything left. And the result of the second cop calling was I got Baker acted because of the questions that I had answered honestly in the Jack Center. And I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know I was going to be Baker acted. I don't know why they took me to the ER, but I sat in the ER for another 12 hours. And that was a lot of time for me to stew about what was wrong with me and my life and how it was all my mother's fault. And I definitely blamed her for that entire situation, because she wouldn't let me see my boyfriend, and she wouldn't, you know, let me have my way, and I wanted my way, and I always want my way, or else I freak out, like, you know, have temper tantrums like that time in kindergarten. And so I get Baker acted, and it was on Christmas of 06, and it was definitely a pretty memorable Christmas. The rules weren't as tight because it was a holiday, and I spent 3 days lying about how I was fine and that I didn't need to be there and that I wasn't insane. And I was surrounded by seriously crazy people. And they were slitting their wrists, and they were being put in the wall padded room. And I'm just like, what is wrong with you guys? You know, just get normal. You know, just be normal. And I'm sitting there in the same situation, you know. And so I leave that thing, you know, you have to convince the therapist that you're better before you can go. And I was like, let me see the freaking therapist, you guys. I'm ready. You know, I'm ready to go. And this was like 12 hours in. And the minimum is 3 days. And I had no idea that it had to be 3 days. I was terminally convinced that, like, if I could just talk to this guy, I could get out and I'd be fine. I could convince him that I was fine. I wasn't fine. You know, I hadn't been medicated yet. The result of the Baker action was I was put on medication. It was pretty apparent that I had an anger issue, and you know, what that turned out to be was a lack of God. And I was heavily medicated in the beginning at 16, and I was medicated up until the point where I was just a few months ago. I just got off of it. And After the Baker action, after some therapy, you know, things started to get back to normal with me and my family, and I started to be content, you know, with my life again. And I was being reliant on this medicine, these pills that the people were giving me, and I lived in a strict household. You know, I was raised by two alcoholics that today both have 20 plus years of sobriety. And I had no idea that I was being raised this way. I had no idea that everything that was coming out of my parents' mouths was coming from the big book. And I didn't really care. You know, I didn't really listen. And I had no interest in what my parents had to tell me. I thought that they were useless and unintelligent because I didn't go to college, because I'm judging them. And it just never occurred to me, you know, that I was being raised in an alcoholic home or a recovering alcoholic home. I got to watch my brother go through this. Growing up, I was pretty in fear of him at times. I was there through the peak of his usings, and I didn't know that he was alcoholic. You know, I didn't know where he went with meetings when he got sober. And I just thought that he was doing what normal kids did. And because of what he had experienced, I was very, very sheltered. I wasn't allowed to hang out with people in the neighborhood. I wasn't allowed to do many things because of the barrier that had been put up by my brother. So when I moved out, I went to college at 18. I said, bye-bye. You know, 2 weeks after graduation, I was out. And it was because I hated my mother, I hated my town, I hated my family. I didn't want to be there anymore. And I needed to get out. So I moved to Tampa into college housing. For about 2 months, I lived a normal life. I know, you know, I did good in school and college. I made pretty good grades. And on one of my trips home, I had a week off from school, and I went home to visit some of my old friends. And I had all this freedom, this newfound freedom that I had never experienced before. And, oh shit, 5 minutes. and all this new freedom, right? And I start to get this idea that I'm going to be able to do drugs now, and I'm going to be able to drink now because I'm not living in this sheltered home. So, long story short, I start clubbing, and I was like into it. You know, I turned 18, and I was like, yes, you know, I have arrived. I'm going to start clubbing every night. It was like a 3-night-a-week thing, Tuesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Sunday was my recovery day. And this was the way that I lived for about 10 months. I discovered drinking, you know, when I was like 15. I didn't really like it. I didn't do for me what the Big Book talks about. I just did it to fit in. And when I was able to have free range, moving out, I went nuts. I went nuts, and I knew my potential of being an alcoholic. I was fully aware that I had the opportunity of being an alcoholic, and I spent my entire time drinking, trying to avoid being an alcoholic. I spent the entire time knowing that if I do too much stuff, you know, it could get bad. So all I did was drink and get high. And I didn't do anything hard. And it didn't matter. Like, it really didn't matter. I was addicted to the feeling of being numb. I was addicted to the loss of reality. And I was addicted to not feeling. And that's what I try to tell people that are outside the program that don't get why I'm here. You know, it's kind of stupid to try to convince somebody that's not alcoholic because they're not going to get it. But I was taking things too far, and I've always taken things too far. I take video games too far. I take eating too far. I take not eating too far. And it's a balance that I think I'm always going to struggle with, being an alcoholic. And I took everything too far, and it brought me down really fast. It was about 10 months before I decided that I needed help. And it was every day. I used every day. On the way to work, on the way home from work, at school, on the way to school, in between classes, before I went to bed, when I woke up. And it was something that I became to rely on. And it was something that I needed to cope with you guys and with every situation that I've dealt with. I couldn't go to school if I wasn't messed up, because I had to talk to you, and I couldn't talk to you because I don't know you. And it didn't matter anymore when I was messed up. It didn't matter. When I decided that I had had enough, I called the one person I knew in AA, and that was Billy. And that's my brother. And I owe him, like, my life. I really do. And he took me to a meeting that night. I was like, I think I need to go to NA. And he's like, no, you're going to go to AA. And I was like, oh, okay. I need something. You know, I don't want to feel the way that I'm feeling anymore, and I can't stop, and I don't know how to stop, and I couldn't get my life together. I was running out of money. I was feeling like crap. I was ready to kill myself in fetal position. And it sucked. Everything about me hurt. And I didn't want that anymore. And I called my brother, and he took me to a meeting that night. And he took me to the 10 p.m. at 3333. And that meeting will always hold a special place in my heart because of that. And it's really important to me, you know, that I recognize the fact that he did help me, because he knows exactly where I was. You know, he had been there so many times. And I'm so thankful that he answered that call, you know, and that he took me to a meeting. And from that day, that meeting, I don't really remember much. There was a woman in there that I identified with, and she told my story. And it was really powerful. I called her as soon as I left that meeting, and I was like, you told me to call you, so I'm going to call you. And, you know, I'd never seen her again. I've never seen her again to this day. I've never seen her. And I don't know what happened to her. I don't know if she's sober, but she helped me see that I'm an alcoholic and that I need to be here. I didn't get sober right away. I spent about 3 months in this program messing around, not doing a damn thing. And I came here in May, and I finally decided to get sober in July, a week after my 19th birthday. I had decided that I was bulletproof and that I didn't need to go to meetings every day, and I ended up relapsing at 53 days sober. It was, like, really miserable. I, like, cried in a lot of meetings about it, and everyone's just like, it's not that big of a deal. You're back. You know, you're back. And I'm back, and I have 6 months and a week or something like that, and this program has changed my life completely. It's given me the friends that I've always wanted, the friends that I never thought I could fit in with. It's given me relationships. You know, my sponsor is like amazing. Like, I want to be just like her. I feel like I'm a mini me of her sometimes. And like, that's what I want. You know, I always think, like, what would she say in this situation? And I'm going to try to say it. And it's okay with her. You know, it's cool. It's cool with her that I want to do that. And before, it was like, you're just a copycat. You know, that's what people would tell me. And the truth was, I just didn't know how to live or who I was. But today I do, and I'm really, 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 really grateful for this program. Thank you.